This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 308, brought to you by Graphically.
Of the magnetic strife, shuffling of columns to form a mutual. And the stagnation. You didn't know that I had it in me. Without your love and unspent capital, I didn't know you had it in you. You gave the key to our continuum.
Hey, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 308. My name, as always, is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello, everyone.
All right. We are from the website ifanboy.com, which is a website dedicated to the celebration of all things comic books. Every week we go to the store and we get a whole, or go to our iPads or whatever. The world is changing. It's hard to keep up.
Very confusing.
And we get a whole stack of comics and read them. And one of us takes the challenge of identifying the book that he deemed to be the pick of the week, the best book that he enjoyed the most this week, and writes a review of it over at iFanboy. And we come back here to discuss it, as well as all the other books that came out. And there were a lot of books that came out, and other items of interest. Want to warn you before we get into the show, we're going to be talking about what happens in the books themselves. So if you haven't read your comics yet, you might get spoiled. So you might want to press pause and come back and listen later, or just deal with it. If in case you get something spoiled, we're sorry in advance, but you knew the risk. We warned you. Wow. This week, Connor had the pick.
Two things about this week that were interesting. One, as you said, there was a lot of books, but they were, on the whole, I thought, pretty good.
It was a great week.
I gave really out tons great of week. Five stars on iFanboy this week.
That's never happened, that we all said it was a great week.
Yeah.
Usually one or two of us will say it, the other one will go,
Yeah, no, it was a great week.
It was a really fun week.
And know what I think? I think it was a great week, as we're going to find out, we found it was good for different reasons.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So. I'm sure. The other thing, like, I thought was, you like sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
This was a week where I thought, and it hasn't happened in a while because of the reboot, that Marvel had a really strong week over DC.
Yep.
I thought there was a lot of really good stuff from Marvel this week, and it was a fun week. But the best book this week was Wolverine and the X-Men number one, so it was the pick of the week. Chris Bochalow on art, Jason Aaron on story. We're going to talk about Jason Aaron because this was one of his weeks where all his books came out, and it'll be a discussion we can talk about in a minute. But first, Wolverine and the X-Men. Schism happened. I read it. Ron read it. We enjoyed it. I'm always in and out of the X-Men. I read them as a kid. I liked them as a kid. I fell off out of the X-Men in the 90s. I keep wanting to find that run of the X-Men that I'll hook onto and love, and I keep trying. I tried Brubaker. I tried Fraction. I tried Gillen, and they've been good in different ways, but I haven't really found that run to be hooked into, and I'm hoping Wolverine the X-Men number one is that run, because this was so much fun.
I'm so glad that you liked it too. It was, oh god, I was all ready to be the lone person ranting and raving about how great it was this week, and I saw you made the pick, and I was like delightfully surprised.
Yeah, this was tons of fun, and I'm admittedly it's in a book written for adults. I mean, it's basically a tour of the school, and it's very much a comedy book, and at least this particular issue is. As the state inspectors come to certify the Jean Grey School for Higher Learning.
Yep.
To make it an actual school. And the headmaster Wolverine and the headmistress Kitty Pryde have to show them around. And it's dealing with bureaucracy and Wolverine trying to be a mature adult while there's all this chaos around him because it's a school for mutants being built by Beast, who's hopped up on caffeine. And there's all these crazy things happening. And the danger room is now the entire school and can pop up anywhere, including the bathroom while you're using it. And it was... It was almost like you could take it as one long tracking shot as they walk through the school of comedy of errors happening around them as Wolverine and Kitty tried to persuade these bureaucrats that this is a school worth certifying. And Bosciolo's art was fantastic. I continue to be one of his biggest fans. It made the idea that this was an issue of people talking, it made it dynamic and interesting and exciting because his art is dynamic and interesting and exciting. And it just there was a little bit of action in here and there, and then it ends with a big action cliffhanger, which we'll get to next issue. I'm sure there'll be a humongous fight, but to me, this was getting the X-Men back to the class and to the school where I always liked them there. I always liked the idea that this was actually a school, not just a place where superheroes hung out until they went off on their next adventure. That there actually is learning and teaching going on here, and there seems to be a lot of thought and effort into putting this as Wolverine wants to teach these kids how to be, I guess, X-Men, and this is the place that's going to happen, and that was really fun.
Yep. I mean, that's really what I kind of have been saying all week. We're talking about it in the comic book store and stuff like that. Is that, and I mentioned, you know, I wrote an advance review of it earlier this week, and Connor, you wrote your pick of the week, and I was glad that our reviews kind of complement each other because I totally forgot to mention the comedy aspect. Mm-hmm. Like Jason Aaron is funny.
Like he's funny. You don't realize that if you only know from Scalped, you think he's probably really dour. But if you meet him in person at a con or something, he's very, very funny.
He's very funny. He's dry. And the comedy totally came out in this. But what's great about this is this whole issue tapped into that magic of what made the X-Men special, at least to me, and made it. This is the kind, like I said, this is the kind of X-Men book I want to read. You know, like yeah. I love the idea of, because the X-Men is, you know, as much of it's their powers and the costumes and the adventures, but it's also all living under one roof. The school environment that's kind of like a community / family kind of environment, and seeing what comes of that. And then, like you said, like the teaching aspect, like the idea that mistakes are going to be made and people learn and all that sort of stuff. Like it just totally tapped into all that stuff that I loved about the X-Men 20 years ago, but doing it, you know, in a way that is new and fresh now, which isn't easy.
He's also set up a lot of different dynamics that will be interesting if they continue to be explored. I mean, yeah. Toad is there. Toad is the Milton of the from Office Space. He wants He wants his bed. He's got no respect. They keep him downstairs as he mops. But there's also Wolverine has to kind of grow up here.
Yeah.
You know, he does start the day with a shot, which as I know a couple of teachers and I know that's probably not far off. But he's got to put on the suit and tie. He's got to walk bureaucrats around. He's got to be Professor Xavier. And it's funny because if you think about all the X-Men who would be Professor Xavier, Wolverine wouldn't be the first choice, but he's become that. He's fallen into that role. And plus,
that's what makes it interesting.
Yep.
I mean, right. When you want to make a choice, you want to make one that isn't expected.
Exactly. Yep. And you've got a bunch of people who are at the school who aren't necessarily good. You've got Quentin Quire. You've got these other kind of bully X-Men. So there's lots of different dynamics here. Plus, you've got the new Hellfire Club who have attacked the X-Men at the very end and who are the man bad guys in Schism who haven't gone away yet.
Is a great kind of foil for it. And everything was great. Like from the opening scene with Wolverine giving Xavier a tour of the school, because throughout all this, the one question I had, I'm like, where's Xavier? Like throughout Schism and all stuff, like Xavier just kind of totally fade in the background. So it opens with, you know, Wolverine kind of getting the blessing from Xavier. And that was funny. That was, you know, where he's like, do you have any advice? He's like, and don't say baseball. That was like nice little nods to the past. Like you mentioned, Wolverine taking the shot in the beginning. I love in Wolverine's office on the shelves, there's like liquor and a katana and Kitty, who is very much the embodiment of the X-Men grown up. Like she was a student at 13 and now she's the headmistress and that kind of works great. Like you said, Beast. It's funny because Beast kind of reminds me of, do you remember, like 4 or 5 reboots ago, when Beast had
say no,
when Beast had those goggles, It on the cover, it looks like that's what they're kind of going back to. And I like on the cover, Beast got like screwdrivers on his belt, like he's that, you know, he's built this amazing kind of facility, which I want to see more of, you know, like,
yes.
You know, like I would love. And my favorite thing of the issue wasn't so much the issue itself. I mean, I love the issue. Also, I love the tying back into Shi'ar and getting Kid Gladiator, which is
awesome. There's so many elements going on here, which is lots of balls in the air.
So many things going on, which is awesome. But then you finish the issue and you turn the page and there's a fantastic faculty and student page with the little representations of each character and like the little art as to kind of show off what their powers are, which is awesome. And then the whole back matter of the class schedule.
With the brochure for the school.
Hysterical.
And the classes and the special events. I mean, there's a lot of... thought going into this.
Yeah,
it's a school.
And actually, I followed up with Jason Aaron to ask him. He wrote all of this back matter. Mm-hmm. So like all the classes, you know, like the art of fighting without fighting with Logan, the art of fighting with fighting. it was like ethics 101, forgetting everything you ever learned from Emma Frost. Algebra sucks, I know, but you still have to learn it with Professor Bobby Drake. Like these are hysterical. They're great. Like, and it just this sense of fun, you know. So I don't know.
We talked about my last pick, I believe, was OMAC, which is in the same vein. I just you know, these days I enjoy my scalps and my Batman, but I also really respond to the really fun comics that are action packed, but also make you laugh. And because we're supposed to be enjoying these things.
The extracurricular activities such as comic book club, reading the classics from Kirby to Morrison, and the quote, "Let's all clean up after ourselves" club with Custodian Toad.
now, Josh, you read this. You're not a big X-Men.
Yeah, I did. I liked it a lot, and I think that when you talk about, I liked that it was silly. I think, and I don't mean that in a bad way, because. And that's, I think, one of the big criticisms that I think I've seen about it. People like, it, you know, it wasn't what they wanted out of it. But there's another X-Men book, I believe.
I'm going to guess
that one is not going to be silly.
Right.
You know, like you'll have a different thing. So this is like the thing, Connor's talked about it for years, is sort of flexibility of a character like Batman. And you can put him in a bunch of different kinds of books and the character sort of supports it. And so this is like a different kind of thing, you know, that's different. That's fun.
Wolverine is very similar
like
in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like it's the contrast of all that makes it work. I you know, in the past, I think you guys didn't start off as Bocciolo fans. He took him a while to win you over.
I believe it's Bocciolo before Scotty Young yells at us.
I wasn't a Bocciolo fan until he did Spider-Man. Then I really came around on him.
Oh, I've been a Bocciolo fan since Generation X, I couldn't help but think of his work on Generation X because that was really the work that established him. You know, 15 years ago, and in a similar kind of environment, and to see, and I kind of went back and I was looking at that art, comparing the two, and it's just amazing to see how he's grown as a cartoonist. And you know, like I remember, you know, people criticized like Avengers with all those talking heads and the you know, the stuff like that. You know, yes, he's great at action. And the last page with my theory is that the school is built on Krakoa or a relative of Krakoa. And that's what it is that came up to eat the school in the last page. But his like facial expressions and his layouts and I mean, he's just great. He's awesome.
It was a well acted issue, I thought. Yeah. And that's one of the strengths of having this more cartoony type of evocative sort of style. And I think it actually lends itself to this. And if you can get behind the fact that it's not necessarily realistic, which, by the way, none of it's realistic,
right?
no matter what, then you can actually probably get something out of it. But I could also see, you know, it's not for everybody. That's fine. You know, what was interesting about this is that there was a lot of nods to the past. I mean, it wasn't like a book written specifically for people who'd never read X-Men, but it also didn't ignore that either. I thought that did it pretty well because it was the idea of saying, hey, there's stuff that's been going on, but you can still catch up with this and go on with it. And it felt like a first issue in a good way. We've been reading so many first issues.
I know, I know. And I said I criticized it a little, saying that I thought it was pretty wordy. But knowing that it needs to be because it's setting up a lot of stuff, it's explaining a lot of things.
You know what? It is, now that I'm like, I can look at the page and I can see it, but I didn't feel it when I was reading it.
No, it was very breezy.
Yeah,
very breezily.
But and I love the back, the last two pages, the things to come, the Sneevee with the Bradshaw art. Like this could be such a fun ride for X-Men fans. I can't wait. It's gonna be like, if this is if this is you know, Jason Aaron out of the gate with what he's going to do with the book, and I don't expect it to be as silly, and I agree with you, Josh, like not in a bad way, but like using the term silly in a bad way, but I don't expect it to be like that the whole time. But to know that hint of humor, because X-Men have always had a hint of humor, even when Claremont was writing it, there was always a
Stan Lee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, there was always a touch of, you know, tongue in cheekness to the conversations and the discussions that the students had and stuff like that. And there were serious moments, and it got serious when it needed to be, but then it could be lighthearted when it needed to be.
Guys, I don't think they're going to get the license. I don't know. I like that it was never even in question.
Yeah.
And so there's this sense of, well, what are we doing all this for? What it like? Yeah. And I like that. It kind of made it into a little bit of a farce, yeah. Again, in a good way. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more Chris Bacala.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of number one Jason Aaron issues, we also have the Incredible Hulk number one, which Jason Aaron wrote along with 14 artists. How many people were on this?
Two.
Book?
Only two.
Two pencilers and three inkers.
Yeah. It was the standard Mark Silvestri as the lead artist, but he did, you know, listed as penciler, and Michael Broussard did the pencil assists, which basically means that Silvestri did the layouts and Broussard did the finishes. But still, it looked great, I thought.
This is fun. I really enjoyed this. This was Hulk living in the center of the earth when he'd be left alone and then not.
Bearded Hulk, awesome.
So here's the thing. Does he cut his hair normally, or does he just will it to be longer? How is that?
He must cut it.
I don't know.
He must cut it.
It must be. It could be a Banner-related thing.
Yeah. Well, Banner's gone. Right. Banner's out.
Right. I know that. So yeah. When Banner was there, his hair had something to do with what Banner's hair was like. But now that he's not,
well, Banner has a beard too. Now, explain to us who have not read Fear Itself what happened here.
I don't know.
I heard about this.
Was this explained?
Somebody was talking to me about this, so it may or may not be wrong. I don't know. Banner and Hulk got in a big argument in their head.
Yep.
And it made each other very mad, and then they were just separated.
Yeah, and then basically Hulk said, "That's it, I'm done with you, Banner," and pushed him out.
Which is odd, because mad was kind of his thing.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm pretty sure that epilogue that was printed, it was one of the 90 epilogues at the end of Fear Itself. I'm pretty sure Marvel.com, those are up to be read on Marvel.com. So if you didn't buy Fear Itself and you want to see what happened, you can go check it out there.
I don't.
Yeah, no, you don't. You don't need to know that. All you need to know is that.
No, I'm just curious. Yeah. You just need to know that they're separated and Hulk's living in the center of the earth with the Moloids.
Yep.
And
we love Hulk.
He's kind of like Conan. He's kind of like Cerebus. It's fun though. I enjoyed it. Jason Aaron, we talked to him in San Diego, and you can see on the video show that he's making a big smashy book, and that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Which it's fun.
Why Hulk not dance and love us?
I mean, it had, you know, it was underground. It had Moloids. It had robots. It had, you know, like, I mean, it had action. Like, it was way. I was ready for not to like love this, and not that I loved it, but I liked it way more than I thought.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm saying I loved it, not that I loved it. I didn't love it, but I loved it.
You know what I mean?
But not.
I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it, because the thing is, it goes back to, it's another one like similar to Batman and Superman. Like, I'm not a big Hulk guy.
Those hot lady Moloids. Who knew?
Yeah. Who knew? But I'm not a big Hulk guy, but I find myself, I love Red Hulk, and now I'm liking this. So.
You like talking monkeys?
I do like talking monkeys.
Huh. Now, Josh, I don't know if you're like me, but I've been in one big ball of stress reading this latest Scalped story.
I want to tell you that the first page of this blew my fucking mind away. I was like, what is this? This is, oh my God, that's what's been behind this the whole time. And it's a little cheesy, but in the best possible way. And if you're reading the book, then you will know what I'm talking about, unless you're really bad with picking up on signals.
Well, I'll just tell people since...
Yeah, so at the very beginning, they show Shunka having some sex.
Shunka.
And the guy... Shunka. That's what he says during, that's why. And the guy says, I think I'm falling in love with you. And then Shunka gets mad and kicks him out, and he says, you're not capable of loving everybody. And then they cut to Lincoln Redcrow meeting Shunka for the first time in a completely different color, and you realize that the whole time... Shunka has just been in love with Red Crow, which I got to tell you, from the first however many trades of this book, I would have never seen that coming. Which yep. it's such a neat moment, and it colors everything that happens in the book after that. There's a hallway thing that we left the last issue off, and it looked like Shunka was going to assassinate Red Crow, but he couldn't go through with it. I really love the redemption of this other character. What's his name? Carlo. Something like that. Carpo. Yeah. Like this shitty, horrible sheriff who was getting, you know, making people young girls give him blowjobs, and then all of a sudden he goes, "Oh man, I want to be a good cop again." Carnow, and so he's like single handedly taking on everybody.
I like the fact that the main character is ostensibly Bad Horse, although mm-hmm. he's not really. Mm-hmm. We've been spending most of this storyline with him with his jaw wired shut.
Yeah, he hasn't said a word in like months.
So you've got the main character who can't talk, which is interesting, and then everyone double crossing everyone in this issue.
Yep.
You think the story's going one way? Nope, they're being double crossed. You think it's going another way? Nope, they're being double crossed. And the final scene where the sheriff is approaching the meth house alone because all of his backup has double crossed him mm-hmm. with a shotgun. I was completely tense. What's going to happen?
Yeah, and then it ended because they always fool you with these pages and pages of previews in the back. I'm telling you, this 20-page thing, it's got me. It's starting to affect me.
I don't even notice it.
More. There's no. Oh, I have been lately because it just feels like there's more left, and it always ends sooner than I think it should. Just a little bit. It's just I mean, there's a lot of years of reading 22 pages, so it's pretty conditioned. But it's totally next.
But the one thing you really got from this week, which I mentioned in the Pickle Week review, between Scalped and Hulk and Wolverine and the X-Men, is that Jason Aaron is a very versatile writer.
He's the strongest one there is.
And there's no one more versatile than him right now.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, there's people as versatile, but there's nobody more. If you read Scalped back-to-back with Wolverine and the X-Men, it's completely, completely different books.
Hard to believe that it's the same person, yeah.
Completely different tone, yeah. Completely different style of writing. Both fantastic. And Hulk is very good too, and that's completely different too.
I mean, it's funny because we've been a fan of Aaron's collectively Aaron's work for a very long time, but it just seems like this is like the high point right now, like between Wolverine the X-Men and Scalped and Hulk and stuff like that. He's just doing some of the best work of his career.
It's not a very long career.
I know. No. Yeah.
And I'm saying that in the best
Scalped
possible
started
terms.
When what was 50 issues? 50.
Yeah, so not even 5 years ago.
About 5 years. Yeah. Good on him. He gets
By the way, just that Scalped cover is an amazing piece of artwork.
If we had a baseball esque player of the week award, we'd give it to Jason Aaron, I guess.
I think that's pretty clear this week because he had, well, some would say 3 5-star books, and some would.
Oh, we should totally do that. We should do like a creator of the week.
Yeah, creator of the week. We get a soundboard.
Yeah, exactly. Pew pew pew.
that's what this show needs. I think after all this time, we need to refresh it. Format change. Format change. Yep. I want to talk about Justice League Dark number 2. I hesitated picking this up. I almost thought, because quite honestly, I'm buying too many comics these days.
I dropped it.
The pull list, I don't. Of course, you dropped it. Why wouldn't you have dropped it?
Well, I was really curious about it. I mean, I like the idea, like whatever. But I was doing the same thing. I'm like, I can't. I'm buying too many comics, and so
I'm out of money. I bought too many comics.
Yeah.
This one though, I really liked this issue.
It was very good.
A lot more than
crap.
The first one.
Really?
Oh no! Literally. Dead man at home arguing with his girlfriend.
Oh man,
it was the best. They're in a bar together. They're in a bar together. They can't touch each other because he's dead.
Right.
And he goes and he takes over some like good looking young dude. He's like, come on, let's go home. Let's do this. And she's like, that's icky. I don't want to do that. And then the guy's girlfriend comes over. And he's like, what are you doing? And then he has to go with the girl so he can smooth it over and not ruin his life. And then they get home and there's this like this. He's in his silly costume and there's this like frosty unsaid silence. And then a girl comes over and he possesses her and then the sort of off screen.
Girl. Oh, she's like, what kind of fucked up male thing is this? And leaves.
And now that was the best part of the book, to me. The rest of the stuff, I'm still not entirely sure what's going on. So, I could read Dead Man at Home. The dead man's arguing at home for a while, but.
Well, they're gathering the team against the Enchantress, so you're still getting people are still coming together. I really liked the John Constantine scene. It was short, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was him. So that was correct. It's really good looking. It's a good looking book. It's sort of like it lives between this sort of realism and illustrative thing that I can't quite put my finger on in a very good way. But it was much better than the first one, and that whole scene was great. I mean, it was like there was like singularly a page of that was better than anything I'd seen in that whole issue of DC Presents.
You see, that's my fear is that when I finally say, okay, I'm not going to buy this series, you could come back and it's going to be like, oh, it was good. You know,
you can't read everything.
No, I want to read everything,
and you can't read everything that's good.
I know.
Now, big question this week was the new Vertigo book from Brian Azzarello and Edward Arezzo.
For a dollar.
For a dollar.
Is it worth a shot? I bought it.
I'm a little torn on this book. I dropped off 100 Bullets, as many people know. I just lost my track with it, and I was sort of half looking forward to this because no one out there draws like Rizzo. I think that's clear, and the guy has this really wonderful. I don't know how to describe his style. It's very simple. It's very evocative, but it's very it's kind of elegant in its simplicity. And you know, he's worked with Azzarello for a long time. They have a very good communication together. And I really respect Brian Azzarello, but I don't always enjoy his work, if that makes sense. Like, I think he does really good work, but it's not always for me. And then this whole thing, it's this sort of future, alternate future kind of thing where they've basically, the spaceman is the space program decided to make all of these humans who could handle space travel. So they got these like sort
to
of
Mars.
Big, yeah, these sort of big dumb mongoloid. They didn't actually explain
to Mars.
They didn't explain that in this very much. That was in the little story that was in Bizarre or Strange, whatever it was. That anthology that Vertigo did a little while ago. That was what explained that. So that's not in this. So if you don't know it, then you just know that they keep calling this ape looking thing Spaceman. The thing that threw me off is that he came up with a form of slang that they use in this alternate future. And I have a hard time reading that kind of thing. But as I kept going through it, I couldn't help but respect it because it all made sense. Like, I understand why people would start talking like this. It sounds just as silly as if you heard any sort of urban slang in any part of the country or the world. It's, you know, it was very similar, but it was very consistent. Like, he invented this, you know, sub-language, this dialect. And so after a little while, I got used to reading it, basically. And I was kind of all right with it. It's a little challenging, but as it would be trying to listen to anybody that you don't understand completely together. So, but I really admired the work that went into it. I guess I'm curious. I want to know more, but I don't really know what's happening. That's the
I other. Loved it.
Well, there's that quicker way to say it.
I thought it was fantastic. It reminded me of like, and not exactly in look or in story or whatever, but like I felt like I was reading Frank Miller's Ronin. Or some Jodorowsky stuff.
Yes,
like
I was going to say that was the thing that sort of slang reminded me of was Miller work.
I loved it. It was like it was some, I don't know. Like, I love the fact that you've got this, you know, him on Mars, and then it shifts to this other timeline. Is this happening in his head because of what happened on Mars, or is this really happening? Like, there's a question you're not quite sure. I love the language use of it. Risa's art is awesome. Like, for 9 issues, this is going to be a 9 issue series, a 9 issue sci-fi kind of out there story. I'm on board.
Yeah,
totally.
Those are two completely different kinds of reviews that you get at iFanboy.com.
Yep, there you go. Connor, did you like it? Or?
I didn't go for it. But,
wow.
I might pick it up and trade if it gets good reviews.
That would be a great little, like, kind of like Day Tripper, like a nice 9 issue volume, like in a trade. Mm-hmm. Like, that might be fun. Like, I'm curious to see how it goes, but like, I want to see, understanding that Azzarello and Rizzo did this 100 issue, you know, magnum opus of the 100 Bullets. I want to see what they do in 9 issues.
They've done shorter stories.
No, I know that, but I'm just saying, but not in Batman, you know, like, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that, like in a creator-owned, well, not creator-owned, but like in a totally unique, something brand new kind of thing. I went into it skeptical, and I was like, by halfway through, I was totally enraptured.
Had you read the short?
No, I didn't read the short.
Okay.
And I kind of got the feeling when it was in that whole world with the weird slang, I also got a little touch of like in a video game almost, you know what I mean? Like like a post-apocalyptic, but like a different, you know, kind of, or like Transmetropolitan. Like, these are all these things that were coming to my head that were like these, you know, near future, foreign yet recognizable, you know what I mean? Like, it's like there's a lot of technology in here that, you know, there's a scene where the dude is virtually hooking up with a woman, you know.
Yeah, but it's not like technology that's so far.
Exactly, but it was believable. Yeah, and then meanwhile he's wearing a pirate's hat, a Pittsburgh Pirates hat. You know, like, so it's like this, you know, somewhat, you know, like there's an iPod-esque kind of device and thing, you know. So I mean, it was somewhat recognizable, but also foreign at the same time, which is fun.
It's cool that you kind of got to understand that when Azzarello does a story, he's totally not going to spoon feed you.
Yep.
You have to just go with it a little bit, and that is tough for some readers.
Give yourself some credit.
Yep.
Yeah, and you also have to, like, follow through because you'll get it. But no, he's not going to explain everything to you. So if you felt like, I don't know exactly, no, it's not you. You're not alone.
Yeah, but this is good. This is good stuff. Yeah. What was also good was I just want Francis Manapul to draw all the comics in the world.
Oh, Jesus.
It's not even fair.
This was also a great week of art. There's a lot of great art.
Yes.
But Manapul was at the top.
Dude, the scene, and we're gonna attempt to talk about Daredevil later on, but Daredevil, I'm gonna cheat here by bringing it up, but Daredevil and Flash both, I love the idea of using comics to visually represent a perception, and the different ways that the artists get that across. And in this particular case, we see as Barry learns how to think fast, you know, how to increase his perception and use the Speed Force, but like in his brain. And the scenes where he's like talking to Patty Spivot and all of a sudden he's aware of everything happening around him were, I thought, awesome because their use of color and use of layout. And like by looking at the page, I knew exactly what was happening. And it was just some great storytelling. And this is like we talk about the writer artist, you know, kind of, you know, can an artist become a writer and do it? I think Manapul and Buccoletto are excelling because they're just telling stories. No, but the them working together, they're telling a complete story, writing art all together, and it's getting across like no other comic book that's on the stands right now. I think it's like the scene when the full page splash and the Flash is running, and in the speed lines you see trails of the where he's going. Yes. You know, like to the left of it, like, oh, that was with the little stamps. Like, oh, it was great. I mean, every page of this was a marvel. It was just like, it was great. So,
I like the fact that they were reflecting the storytelling in the way they tell the story, and that Flash is learning to think fast. So, this issue is happening very fast and choppy because he's flying all over the place and his thinking has changed. So, they're trying to reflect how he lives or experiences life through the way they're telling the story.
Yeah. And the scene where he like interpreted, like when he's like, I can see everything that's happening before it happens. I can weigh out every possible outcome and then make the right choice. And then he manipulates the tow truck and the apples and the streetlight and the kid. And, you know, like, and you see the end result, and it's the Flash doing what he does you never see him actually do it. You just saw him figure out what he needs to do. And then it happens. And then there's just Barry eating an apple.
Like Kingdom Come Flash. It really is gorgeous.
Yep.
And he could draw all the books. That's fine.
Yep. I'm totally okay with that.
One book a year.
And I love the title page with the Flash in the what was it? The fourth page where it says the Flash, think fast. Like
there was also a lot of contextual sound effects this week too.
Yep. Oh, I love contextual sound effects. That's my new favorite thing. It's not really new, but it's one of my favorite things.
It's new for you.
Well, it's not new for me. I've always enjoyed it.
I mean,
it's your
new favorite thing.
Well, no, yeah, my current favorite.
It's new, but it's a new favorite.
My latest thing. Yes. I don't know. So, thing. Love the Flash. Manapul can do everything.
Next week, it'll be Golden Age style word balloons.
Hey, I miss the old 80s style thought balloons.
There were Golden Age style word balloons in Unwritten this week. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Okay, cool. So real quickly, want to tell everybody about Graphically. iFanboy is a part of the Graphically universe, and a Graphically is where you can enjoy your favorite digital comics with over 5,000 comics from over 250 publishers. Comics from Marvel Comics, Boom Studios, Archaea, and now Image Comics is also available up on Graphically. And every Wednesday, you want to come check out Graphically to see what Image and Archaea and Top Cow and other titles are available same day as print, which means that available in the store, they're available up on Graphically. So you can get them. You don't even need to leave your home. You can just get up and go to the computer, or go to the iPad, and
you don't got
to
put on pants.
Yeah, it's amazing. And there's more exciting stuff to come. We're bringing on a couple of new publishers in November, so you definitely want to stay tuned. And you're gonna want to follow Graphically on twitter.com/graphically, so you don't miss a thing. And you can read comics on the web, on your iPhone, on your iPad, and your Android phone or tablet, whatever you want. We've got it. If you've got an iPad, you might want to check out go into the newsstand in iTunes, where you can subscribe to The Walking Dead, Invincible, Savage Dragon, Irredeemable, and more, Morning Glories. Really cool, specific newsstand apps that delivers the comics directly to you when they come out. Also, if you've got a Barnes & Noble Nook or an Android device, you can get the complete Walking Dead, all the trade paperbacks, all 14 volumes are available there for download and enjoyment on your Nook Color or Android tablet. And you can also get them in the Android Marketplace as well, so they're there as well. So go to graphically.com. where you can find all the information and get your digital comics fixed today. It's that time of year.
We haven't done it in a while, but there's a lot of good books we want to talk about this week, so we brought the bell back. Now, if you're new to the show, you may not know what the bell is. I don't even know the last time we did it. It's been at least a year.
Yeah.
The bell means we have 15 seconds to talk about each book. At the end of 15 seconds, you'll hear this. and time for the new book. So can, we have a whole list here.
Can you move the bell closer to your mic? Like, it's very faint for me. I want to make sure I hear the bell. There you go. That's better.
Oh,
okay.
That's too close.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good.
How about here?
That's perfect. Perfect.
All right, perfect.
Ron
okay.
can't hear anything.
All right.
Ron is half deaf.
So you're on the clock. Are you timing yourself or does one of
I'm
us
gonna
need...
I'm going to time myself as well.
Okay, you sure? All right.
Yeah, you're still going. He's yeah, the... No, it's good. We're good.
He's the time master.
All right, so ready, Ron? I'm going to count you in 3, 2, 1, go.
All right, Daredevil number 5, again representing the Daredevil as a blind man and visually stunning, and Foggy's getting some, not from who we thought he was getting some, so I enjoyed that twist.
Marcos Martin.
Marcos Martin, yes. Art was amazing in terms of representing.
Incorruptible number 23. I'm not going to lie. I was pretty much ready to get off this. Not that it was bad. I was just kind of bored. But then there's a great fight and resolution between the Plutonian who shows up and Max Damage. And I was like, nah, and there's a secret thing that happens. And I don't know what it is. And I was totally fun. 5 stars. Great book.
I'm not going to lie. I fell asleep reading Blackhawks number 2. I was on the couch. I woke up half an hour later with the book on my chest, so I probably have to drop it. I feel like that's what that means. I feel bad because I wanted to like it.
Secret Avengers number 18. The fantastic art on Secret Avengers with Warren Ellis continues. This time David Aja comes in with a amazing Steranko-esque issue that, again, makes me wish that Warren Ellis and rotating artists were on Secret Avengers forever, because this was just fantastic. And Shang-Chi, Master Kung Fu.
Vampire number 2. This would suck if it wasn't for the two main characters having formerly been in a relationship. And I enjoy it for that aspect alone. They're just fighting all the time, but there's this odd tension there between vampires and almost despite myself.
Captain America and Bucky 623. I got to the end and I went, "No!" because they're done with the World War II era,
yep.
which I wasn't expecting. They're going to move on to the Winter Soldier era, and that really bums me out because I've been enjoying the World War II stories. I feel like I've been sold a bill of goods.
I would read this book forever.
Little Depressed Boy number 7, one of my favorite comics on the title right now. Yes, it's a little emo. Yes, it's relationship-y, but there's a poetic quietness to this book that I find absolutely compelling. And I don't know if it's because that dude's just got a small happy face because he's a doll or whatever, but this book I look forward to it. Every issue comes out.
Venom number 8 is just a wonderful bit of work from both Tom Fowler and Rick Remender. It was gorgeous to look at. There was wonderful cartooning the whole way through, and this really odd female villain who I guess I would know about from other books, but there was a lot of like sexual innuendo going.
All-Star Western number 2, we had a backup story by Jordy Bernay, and gorgeous. Although it was weird to see him not drawing Jonah Hex. He was drawing El Diablo. And then the main story, Jonah Hex shot a lot of people, which, yeah. you know, to me was what I missed.
God in heaven.
Convenient how he ends, right, and then the bell goes. FF number 11, Barry Kitson can also draw lots of the comics because he's fucking awesome. Although it fell apart a little towards the end. It got a little rough with the heroes. That one-shot of Reed at the bottom was kind of weird. But Supreme War.
Speaking of Jonathan Hickman falling apart at the end, Red Wing number 4 came out. I don't know how it ended. This is the same thing that happened to me with Pax Romana.
Disagree.
All the way through, and it was just the ending was weird, and I'd have to read it again.
Was awesome.
All right, whatever.
Yeah, more time. Now it's over.
I yield.
Voodoo number 2. It was sexy. I mean, Ron Morrison. He said he's going to do a sexy book, and he's doing a sexy book. So there we go.
Oh, what we learned from Connor this time out is if you make us laugh, then you're just going to waste your time.
All right, I only need 1 second. Infinite Horizon number 5. I didn't think that was ever going to happen.
I didn't even know it was going to come out.
I know. It's amazing. 4 and 5 are available up on Graphly if you want to catch up. But, I guess they're finishing it.
Noto.
Yes.
Man, I found a really helpful function on the iPad that iPhone that would have made this much easier. Next time.
Which was?
The lap button. Instead of trying to stop it and restart it with every person, I just could hit lap every time.
Yeah.
Next time, people.
So Josh's favorite feature with the bell is over. So, Josh, good job there. I'm glad you survived it. So those are some of the amazing books that we read this week. But also you and the iFanbase, you went out and you read a bunch of comics as well, and you went to iFanboy.com and you rated them and you made your picks of the week. And Josh, why don't you walk us through the top five picks of the week this week?
I can do that. At number five, Daredevil number five, we got 2.9%. Number four, Captain America Bucky number 623. There was just not enough of it. 3.7%. And Flash number two comes in at number three with 15.5%. Pretty big. Amazing Spider-Man wrapping up Spider Island with number 672 at 20.1%. And Wolverine and the X-Men number one, the overwhelming choice at 45.1% that agree with Connor.
Seriously, look at that top five. That's a solid top five.
It's a great week. Top five.
And I could give you another five books that could have easily been there.
I totally agree.
It's a really good week.
This week.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Awesome. So you all wrote some reviews. Connor, why don't you take it away?
Denver Dave reviewed Aquaman number two and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and 0.7% of you made it the pick of the week. And Denver Dave says, one thing I found really remarkable about this issue was Johns' use of the unknown to elicit fear in the reader's imagination. On the dock, the people are terrified, the helicopters hover, and Aquaman searches for aquatic life, woo, 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 and says, there's nothing out there to respond, no fish, no anything, leaving us to our wild comic reader imaginations. Did they kill everything in the sea? I felt it built up really well, the coming attack.
I'm mixed on this. I don't know how much longer I'm going to last.
I love the hell out of
this. I'm not grabbed yet.
I feel like Denver Dave is the name of a low-grade drug dealer who lives nowhere near Denver.
You got to go see Denver Dave.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, you want some of that premium weed? Check out Denver Dave, and he's like in Springfield, Mass.
I know.
He's a fan.
Ivan Rice's art is great. It's just that for some, I'm just not, like I said, I'm not grabbed yet. I'll stick with it, but I'm not grabbed. So, anyway.
It's still very much in setup mode.
Yeah, totally. And there was one little tongue in cheek, you know, it's chainmail or whatever. The R. I didn't recognize you without the orange shirt. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Our next review comes from Mr. Logical, who reviewed Amazing Spider-Man number 672, gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and 20.1% of you made it your pick of the week. And Mr. Logical very logically says that slot story particularly grabbed me because although threat to Peter's world felt real, it was portrayed lightly enough that it remained fun. There was no shocking deaths or angst-ridden heroes telling us that everything is different now. J. Jonah Jameson got turned into a giant spider monster, and there was never any doubt that things would go back to normal with everyone enjoying a laugh at the Spider-Mayor's expense. Too many stories try too hard to matter. This one just tried to be fun. And I got to say, at the end of Spider Island, there were some bumps in the road. But I think it came out on the better side of things. It wasn't. I don't think it was perfect. I don't think it was the best Spider-Man story ever told. I thought it was ambitious. I thought they did a good job. They wrapped it up really well. I thought it tied into Venom. The way Venom and Spider-Man dovetailed into each other was effortless. Was perfect. I'm kind of glad it's over though. But it was enjoyable. I liked it. I would give it probably. I gave it probably a 4. So.
It seemed to end very strong. People seemed to really like it.
Yeah, no, it ended very, very strong. Like, it started off strong. It wavered a little bit, like, in the second lap, but then it finished strong. So.
Well, that's better than sort of the opposite.
Yeah.
Where, like, the first two are really good, and then it ends with a thud.
Yeah, exactly. Thud. So. All right. Thud. So, on to the email. Before I go on to email, go to ifanboy.com. You can do your pull list, get your whole list of comics you're going to buy every week, then come back, rate them on a 5-star scale, and write reviews, and make your picks of the week, and we might pick yours and highlight them on the show. So, all right, on to the email. Deshaun B. writes in, says, why do covers sometimes tell the opposite of what goes on inside the comic book? Like Avengers number 18 indicates there will be a new lineup of heroes, and how the covers to team books, Teen Titans and Justice League, have all the members on the cover page, and only 2 or 3 of them are actually in it. For the new readers brought on by the relaunch, to see a book with these very popular superheroes on the cover and then buy Justice League for the first time or another team book and the person they're hoping to see isn't there would kind of turn them off to reading that book?
Deshaun, they're fucking with you. That's what's happening here. They are. I'm not even like they're trying to do two things.
It's marketing.
They're trying to sell the book to the regular people who don't give a shit what's on the cover. And then they're trying to sell a book to Johnny Q. Ignorant. That's not you. I'm not saying that, Deshaun. Who just goes, ooh, Spider-Man, and picks it up. And those two have nothing to do with one another anymore. And that's why I thought it was really cool this week on a bunch of DC comics. They did it last week too, but they put stuff on the cover that was indicative of what was going on inside. It was some like old school cover text and telling the story and you know, just saying so-and-so appears or you know, this is happening. It's a trend that they got into that I really don't like.
Well, part of it,
it's time honored too. It's not like it's new.
Yeah,
that's true.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well, if you go into the problem over the past like 5 years or 10 years or whatever was that because the comics are being solicited 3 months before they're done, sometimes the covers have to be done before the comic is done. Mm-hmm. And so what they're doing is just saying, okay, we'll do the cover so we can include in the solicits, and then somewhere along the line something changes or whatever. And there's a good chance that Marvel told Daniel Acuna for Avengers 18, draw Cap picking, looking at pictures on a table, and then Bendis is like, yeah, well, I'm going to reveal that in issue 19 or issue 20, and I'm going to spread out that story a little more. And the cover's already done. There's nothing they can do about it. It sucks. This is something I've railed on for years. I hate when the cover doesn't represent what's happening inside.
But it's also a way to entice you to buy. I mean, one of the most famous Batman covers ever is Robin Dies at Dawn with Batman holding his body. He didn't die in the issue.
Yeah.
But the whole point is to get you to go, ooh, what's going to happen? And buy it, and then you find out. It's not – I mean, that's just the way the comics have always been marketed on their covers, is to try to entice you with the most – that's in the story tease way. In the group shot way, that's just modern comic covers. They just throw pinups on there.
I mean, yeah. At some point, comic covers became pinups.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, there are a large number of cover artists, and those are people who put covers on the outside. They don't look anything of what's going on the inside, which I tend to not like.
No, I think I personally think if I was running a comic book company, the covers should be contextually relevant to the story inside. And I agree with you, Connor. They should be enticing, and they should they should challenge you to say what's going to happen inside, make you want to open it up, whatever. But it should be indicative of what you're going to get inside that issue.
There are some exceptions, as I was going to say about like Scalp. That's all right how they do that.
Well, yeah, but
or Astro City. But I mean, that's a team.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, I never had a problem with any of the Astro City covers. I don't know Scalp as well as you guys do, but I never had a problem with the Astro City covers that they weren't reflective of what was inside.
The Scalp ones are.
Yeah.
They're definitely contextual.
Yeah. But
it's different artists. That's what he's saying.
Well, yeah. I'm fine with it being a different artist. I'm not saying it needs to be the interior artist, although I would prefer that. But
I think though that there is a thing where it's like sometimes it doesn't fit with the art that's inside. I think that's more what I mean. So if you look at Captain America and Bucky.
Yeah. Yes. Totally agreed.
Those covers don't fit on it at all. And it just they're totally.
Yeah, but the reason why people will buy it McGinnis.
I get it, but aren't they going to be upset of what looks inside, or people just buying for the cover?
I don't think nobody can get upset by Chris Omni art.
That's a good point, but those covers have really been a drawback.
Those covers work against it, I totally agree. Yes. And also to a certain degree, the Secret Avengers recent issues with the Cassidy covers, they've been good covers. They were much better than the Shadowland covers that he did, that he phoned in, but they haven't really been reflective of what was going on inside the book at all.
Well, the Ultimate covers.
Don't get me started. The Ultimate covers. Load of horse shit.
that's why I said it.
Right? Oh, man. Man. Why do Ultimates always suffer from bad covers?
Because that's the pinnacle of the pinup cover. There was 100 and how many, 20 issues until they stopped doing it, of just Spider-Man swinging through New York?
Yeah,
on a building for the entire run.
Computer-generated. Oh, they were bad. Anyway. They got away from the computer-generated, though. Yeah.
Were those Bagley?
They were later on. Later on they were. Yeah.
Ugh.
So anyway. Okay, on to our next email.
Anthony from New York writes, I've been reading comics for a long time. My attitude has basically been, if it ain't wearing a cape, I couldn't care less. I love TV crime dramas. The Wire may be the finest show of all time. I love fantasy, sci-fi, and westerns, but never once read a comic book that didn't involve a superhero. I know I'm missing out on a lot of good stuff, so I'd like to step outside my comfy superhero bubble and try some new genres. There's 6 titles I'm really interested in, but I'd like to start by picking up the first trade of 3 of the following. So he's going to give us a choice.
Very analytical.
Yeah. Tell which one to pick.
I like the polarizing. Like, not tell me which 3 to pick, one or the other.
Right.
Of these 3 groupings.
Choice 1 is 100 Bullets or Scalped?
Scalped.
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 Choice 2 is Hellboy or Fables?
I'll let Josh answer first.
That's a tough one. I'm going to say Hellboy.
Hellboy.
Boy. Number 3, Fear Agent or Jonah Hex?
Fear Agent.
Yeah, it's tough with Fear Agent.
Those are not comparable books.
No.
And it, like one doesn't cancel out the other one.
Well, they're both westerns.
Yeah, but Hellboy and Fables isn't comparable either.
That's true, but I think one of them just has a stronger.
Well, yeah. I mean, I personally, for me, I go sci-fi over western. That's me.
No, right. Well, the thing about Fear Agent.
Western, though.
Yeah, but Fear Agent's been a war book. Fear Agent's been a Western. Fear Agent's been sci-fi. It's been all of those things. It's a genre mash against a sci-fi sort of space adventure backup. Overall, though, it has a stronger singular creative and narrative drive than Jonah Hex. Jonah Hex is a lot of Jonah Hex is really fun to read in issues. I don't know if I would want to sit there and just read a bunch of them at one time.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. They're friggin' amazing. They're great. They did 60 issues of great comic books.
Hmm. Fear Agent.
Did I convince you?
No, I said Fear Agent to begin with.
Okay.
All right. So there you go. So there you have it.
I've never convinced Connor of anything. I just realized that right now.
So Scalped, Hellboy, and Fear Agent. That's the majority says. So.
Now you go back.
You convinced us to read Fables, the first two trades.
Yeah.
You didn't finish them. You didn't want to read anymore. Two. I mean, you didn't want to read
them.
Anymore.
I read them.
Yeah, we read them.
You convinced me to read them.
I'm thinking about dropping Fables.
What?
It's been a really long time, and I'm kind of bored.
Were you not excited by all the TV shows?
Oh.
Okay. So if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We'd love to hear from you. All right, so on to the voicemail. Our first question's got a practical question.
Hey, boys. This is Russ from Illinois, also known as Finbar Bat on the forums, with a perennial question. What do you do with your comics? What do you do? When was the last time you bought a long box? Where are your comics from 4 weeks ago? Where are your comics from 4 months ago? As you get older and acquire houses and space becomes a premium, are you still collecting your comics? Personally, anything with a spine winds up on my bookshelves, trades and thick things, and anything that's a single issue, I'm starting to view as eventual garbage. So I'm just curious, what are you doing with your comics? Thanks, guys. Bye.
They're all right here. right to my left of me. I wish I was kidding.
If you hold the mic up to them, you can hear them groan like an old ship.
I have every issue I've ever purchased in bagged and board. I bought a long box 2 weeks ago. They're all here in my sad little apartment in San Francisco. And I have numerous shelves of trade paperbacks and hardcovers and things like that. In fact, I'm running out of space there. I've got like 45 long boxes now. So that's me. I'm crazy.
I'm getting to be like Russ, I think, in that I don't care about the pamphlets. I can't believe I said that. I don't like that.
Don't say that. Single issues.
I didn't.
We know they're not pamphlets.
We know they're not pamphlets.
Why I'm laughing. Oh, you can clearly tell that I sit in this house with no one to talk to for days and days at a time. At least about this stuff.
I just snorted.
Now, I'm starting to believe that my issues are a little bit disposable in the same sense. I can't bring myself to throw them away. I've never put comics in the recycle. No, one time I did.
I've never. I've got 9 diamond boxes in my kitchen right now. I need to get rid of.
Well, the thing is, eventually, like, people are like, "Well, give them to kids." I'm like, I don't have any comics for kids. I just don't. I'm actually getting to the point where, like, every once in a while, I'll go through my trades and things that I've gotten, and I don't want all of them. Just because it has a spine doesn't mean I'm ever going to read it again, or I think it's that good. Sort of later on, my system is I have 2 short drawer boxes in my office. And those take me a while to fill up. I just throw them in there until they get filled, and then I just bought a long box to sort of put all those comics in, and I'll throw it in the basement for now. But I'm sure within a couple of years, I'll go through and thin those out and give them away, or just bring them to the comic shop or something like that.
I gotta tell you, what's been tempting is, like, especially with those collected editions, like that Incal hardcover that I did the Book of the Month a few months ago. Yeah, that's going for like $150 online now.
Yeah,
The Alias omnibus I have, I could easily get $300 for that.
Yeah, I check around every once in a while. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to read this Promethea thing ever again.
Except for this week's DC books, I don't have any of the DC books left anymore. I've gotten rid of everything. I don't keep single issues anymore.
You just throw them away?
No, I give them to my girlfriend. She has a library in her classroom, and she has a box of comics, and I give her every week.
Those violent, sexist DC books?
Give her Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Yeah, no, she didn't want that one. She took all the other ones.
Voodoo?
Voodoo she took. She didn't take Catwoman. No, not Catwoman. But I read them. We do the show. I give them to her at the end of the week, and she takes them to class. I don't keep them anymore. I don't keep any single issues anymore. I just have the trades.
Like a sucker.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want them everywhere anymore. I decide. I'm in a new place. I don't want comics everywhere.
Ron, what's your end goal? Is it to be buried in them like Kublai Khan?
No. It's just, I have a closet, so they're out of, like, that's the thing. It's like, you come over my...
Now you do, but if this keeps going.
Yeah, let's not worry about that. Live every day as if it's your last.
Are you going to be on A&E?
Stop. Stop that. All right.
No, it's a serious question. Are you going to keep them all? Do you want to go back to read them, or is it about possessing them?
I don't know. Now is not the time.
I didn't know this was a nerve.
So if you have any questions, you can call in. Leave us a voicemail, 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. It's great to see more people calling in now that we're back on schedule. So get your calls in. You get on the show. It's always lovely to hear from you. And if you can't get enough of this podcast, you want to check out iFanboy Don't Miss, which is our podcast that hypothetically talks to a creator every week about a book that's coming out. We're getting our legs out back from under us after the New York Con, but we should be back
soon. No, we're not. I can't. That friggin' con. I didn't even get sick.
Yeah,
I was trying to explain to somebody why it was so rough and I couldn't.
Yeah. It just was. It was brutal. But go to iFanboy.com or go to iTunes and subscribe to iFanboy Don't Miss, and you hear some great conversations with some great creators coming back soon.
What a bunch of douchebags we are.
I know.
It was brutal.
I know. That's why I say, like, afterwards, I'm like, I could complain, but I can't really. It's not. I know.
It's a Comic-Con. But it made me very busy before, and it made me very busy afterwards, and it made me very tired during.
Yeah.
Those are all real things, just like any other job.
You may have missed on the feed, we talked about Batman Year One, the latest original animated film from DC's Bruce Timm, his animated department. I'm falling asleep apparently again. I must have been reading Blackhawks. If you look back on the feed, me and Paul and Ryan Hopp talked about Batman Year One. It's really, if you're a big fan of the book, you should check it out. It was amazingly well done. Also, if you listen to this, it's Halloween, or it's just Halloween just happened, or it's about to happen, or it's right around Halloween time. Send in your Halloween costume pictures like we've been doing the last couple of years. I'm trying to get to the end, Josh. Don't distract me.
You make me laugh
today. Shh. So send in your pictures. Go to fanboy.com. There's a red post on top. We compile them every year. It's a lot of fun. We like getting a ton of photos sent in. So send them in. Go to the iFanboy.com.
Pull the ripcord. Bail.
Bailed out. I just went up.
We're gonna put these up for Halloween, and we know it's not gonna be Halloween. Yeah. But
go to iFanboy.com. Click on the Halloween post. You can get all the instructions how to send it in. Also at iFanboy.com, you can see all the great articles and all the great writings that have to do about all those wonderful pamphlets, and we know they're not pamphlets. Comics that we enjoy, including Connor's Pick of the Week review of Wolverine and the X-Men, and all the other great writing that's up on there. So find that
Josh's
out.
Josh's Book of the Month review tomorrow.
Josh's Book of the Month review is coming out soon. Yes.
Whoa.
So check that out.
First Monday.
Excellent.
That's not Monday.
No, it's not. No, it's because the Monday is October 31st. Yeah. Yeah, so you got another week. So... also go to ifanboy.com/about to see all of the staff that works at iFanboy, as well as our social network links. So you can go follow us on Twitter, and you can follow iFanboy at ifanboy.com/twitter, or at twitter.com/iFanboy, or at facebook.com/iFanboy. On Wednesday last week, we had our first episode of the New York Comic Con coverage. We hope everybody enjoyed it. And this week, we've got another volume of more great interviews. And if you didn't check out the introduction, Mr. Josh Flanagan deserves a pat on the back for nailing this con. I love how we all had our shiny moments.
And we're never going to do it again.
You know, yeah, exactly. That was this year. That was it. But Connor with Seattle, with Twin Peaks. And then I did the Party of Five one. And then we all kind of worked on the San Diego one. And now Josh with the Night Court one. I'm very proud of you guys. It was good. So
ER was the...
Oh, the ER was great.
ER was the highlight.
Yeah. ER, we see, what happened was that the Seattle one was like... That was just to make me and Connor laugh.
That was just
Josh didn't even care about that, right?
And I didn't even know what it was.
Exactly. But then we go to C2E2, and Josh takes it up a level. Josh takes it up a notch.
Why did I do that?
So, ugh. Yeah. So,
I can't believe we pulled it off.
Good job.
Oh, this show has been all about – that was very nice, but everything before that is just us throwing each other under the bus. Just Connor's like, hey, your book of the month, dude. And I was like, shut up. And then before that, he's just flailing, and we're like, let's watch where he goes with this. We could save him.
Nowhere good. No.
Okay.
We could come in. If you want to write to us, you can write to contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave an email at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. We answer that stuff here on the show, or the emails we'll do in the letter columns, which come out on the website every Friday. That's good stuff, too. Questions, comments, concerns. And any of that stuff, write us, call us, let us know what you think, what you want, something.
Connor, can you handle this?
I can. If you like the show or the Don't Miss Show or the video show, go to iTunes and write a review. It's how people find their podcasts. And if they're looking for a comic podcast, maybe they'll like ours. So if you write a review, it'll help them find it. Or other podcasts. There's other ones out there. They may not be as good or they might be better. Who knows? But they're out there. So write reviews for them too. Any show you listen to, they'd really appreciate it. Even better than that is to tell your friends who read comics, comic store people, people in the industry, other comics journalists. Anyone really.
I want to go on one of those panels, man. Just at the end, go, come on.
Okay, so until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I am Josh.
This eruption under stagnation. You didn't know we had it in me. We felt our love, an unspent capsule. I didn't know you had it in you. This eruption under stagnation. You didn't know I had it in me. This eruption under stagnation. You didn't know.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.